Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Good to have your company once again. Tech Talk, it's our opportunity each week to get together as blind or partially sighted people and explore the world of technology. We're always keen to hear from you, so why not drop us a line? techtalk@rnib.org.uk, techtalk at rnib.org.uk. We're keen to hear your thoughts, comments, feedback, questions, all that good stuff. Right, coming up this week, we'll be hearing from RNIB's music service about working in the music industry if you are blind or partially sighted. We'll also be catching up with one community group who is hoping to make technology more accessible for their users. Plus, we'll be thinking about technology bugbears. What's getting on your nerves? What gets under your skin? We'll be keen to hear about that a little bit later on. Joining us, we have three co-hosts this time: Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic, and Jackie Brown. Welcome in to you all. Let's see what's grabbing your attention from the world of technology this time. Callum, what's new with you?
Well, the app PixieBot, or PixieBot if you're a screen reader user, I never quite know how to pronounce it. The app that does video descriptions, that has had an update recently and is now using some new AI services, one of them being, I think it's called Gemini Pro, one of the Gemini descriptions, well, one of the Gemini services, I should say, to provide descriptions. And I have to be honest, I've been playing with this a little bit. I can't tell a massive difference between all these different services at the minute. I've only tried it briefly, but it's really interesting how many new services are being added to that and how much, you know, you can really kind of, because I've never really seen many apps do this, you know. Be My Eyes, for example, which doesn't do photo videos, admittedly, that only lets you use, you know, you're restricted to the one service. But I like the idea of this, that if one service doesn't give you the description you want, try another one. So I'm finding it really interesting, and obviously Gemini's been talked about quite a lot lately, so we'll see how it handles this, see how it does with the like our homemade video descriptions.
Gemini's the AI from Google.
Yeah.
Pro suggests a slightly more advanced version.
Yeah.
It will be interesting, I think, Callum, to compare and contrast outputs from these various AIs. It's interesting to me sometimes the Be My AI descriptions, I find sometimes can be a little bit flowery when it comes to image descriptions. And I quite like the Aira Access AI implementation. Maybe they've crafted their prompts slightly differently. It seems to be a little bit more factual. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, it just sort of gets to the point a bit more, whereas Be My AI can be a bit wordy. And it depends what you're doing, doesn't it? You know, sometimes, like I've said before about taking family photos with the Meta Ray-Bans, and in that case, you know, when we've got photos of like the baby and stuff, I do kind of want a bit of a description and, you know, oh, he's wearing a cute outfit and, you know, things like that. But sometimes if you've just got an image of, I don't know, a, you know, food product or some packaging or some, you know, letters or something, you don't really care about how it's written. You just want to get to the point of the information that's there.
I find that with PixieBot myself, where some of the descriptions can be very kind of based on emotion, and it's fair enough for certain things, but like you say, if you're taking picture of something that you just want the facts, you just want the main information, it kind of going and describing things in a bit of a flowery way, as we say, it can be a bit annoying. It's just get to the point, and I think that's the important thing sometimes. It's being able to distinguish what you want based on the image you take sometimes. It's the context that's important.
We'd be keen to hear from you on this point. Do you find those AI descriptions a little bit poetic? Do you like a bit of poetry in your AI descriptions? Do let us know. Hubert, what's going on with you in terms of the world of technology this time?
A little update to the original, the main Blue Sky app, at least on iOS perspective here. There's been a few accessibility issues with Blue Sky. One of them was that it was tricky to scroll through the feed of posts. You can kind of only read one or two posts before it would kind of get stuck or move you to the bottom tabs along the screen and not let you read all of the posts in your feed. That has now been fixed. You can now read multiple posts in your feed using the main Blue Sky app on iOS. Blue Sky being this new social media platform that is picking up users left, right and centre from a certain platform known as X.
Have you tried Skeets? This is an alternative Blue Sky client, S-K-E-E-T-S. I found that to be a little bit more accessible.
That's news to me. I've heard of the one we mentioned before, the very comedically named Grey Sky, but I've not heard of this one. That's a new one on me.
Love that.
Grey Sky. All right. Let us know. Are you a Blue Skyer? Have you tried the official Blue Sky app or Skeets or one of the others? Let us know your favourite. Jackie Brown, welcome in. What's on your tech table this week?
I would like to give a shout out, being it's coming up to Christmas and people are inevitably going to get something tech related. I would have thought these days most people do get something, even if it's a smart plug or an A-Lady or a Google device, whatever it is, you are possibly going to need some help with the setting up of that. So just to give my colleagues a shout out in the sight loss advice team, the ones with digital skills in particularly will be able to help you if you call the RNIB helpline and you need some tech help. Please do contact RNIB and one of my colleagues in that team with digital skills expertise will hopefully be able to help you and get you sorted out with either a volunteer or over the phone or with a friend or a neighbour, just whatever it is that you are stuck with, give the guys a call.
Mm. And it's not 24/7, is it, Jackie? I mean, if someone's there at 6 o'clock on Christmas morning trying to furiously get something to
work, had it.
Yeah, you might have to go and have a little look online.
Yeah. Obviously, we have office hours, so you know, bear with us. We do have holidays. We are allowed to close and stuff. So it would be with an office. I know it's terrible, but we will be available. RNIB is always available during office hours, and the guys will be more than happy to help you if they can.
Yeah, and you've got things like the Disability Answer Desk, which I think uses a bit of AI now as well. So you might be able to get an answer there if it's a Microsoft product. So maybe checking out some of those specialist providers and, of course, lots of resources online. Let us know about some of your favourites. Are you expecting to be doing quite a bit of tech support over the holidays, Jackie?
No, I shall be in, but I won't be doing tech support. I will be writing when I get, it'll be quiet during the holiday period, so I'll be writing some tech content for our website. So that's more my thing at the moment.
And how about friends and family, Callum?
Yeah, I'll be on family tech support duty, I'm sure, over Christmas. That seems to be my annual
yeah, I'll be doing friends and family as well. If anybody needs anything in the family or friends that we have, then of course we're always around.
And let's do a quickly round the room. What's the most common tech question that you get this time of year?
For me, it's usually about setup. The number of times, especially lately, that I've had calls from people. Usually, I'm amazed if I've got to 2 o'clock on Christmas Day and not had a phone call or a text. I've got this. It's been a lot of smart home stuff recently. I've got these smart plugs. What do I do with them? Got these smart bulbs. How do I set them up? Yeah. I can't get them onto the Wi-Fi.
they're very common queries. Something to do with the phone, or I can't install an app, or what's the app that does such and such? Can you tell me how to spell it? Because you know, if you don't spell it properly, or you spell it the way you think it should be and it isn't, then you're not going to find it in the stores. So. Yeah, there's all kinds of queries that we can get, but yeah, I'll be helping out.
usually with those smart plugs or smart bulbs, you usually need to download the companion app and then connect to the device's own Wi-Fi network. That's usually the way forward, isn't it?
Yeah, you do.
With those devices. Yeah. Hubert, do you get technical support inquiries from friends or family over the holidays?
I do on occasion, and it's usually, I've changed a setting. I don't know how I've changed it. Can you tell me how to change it back? which is always the interesting one, because it's like, well, I don't know what setting you've changed, and it might not even be on an accessible device. So it can be quite interesting. My notifications have stopped working. What do I do? It's like, yeah, it's an interesting one. Or the disappointment when someone asks me, have you received in tech for Christmas? And I go, well, not this year. And I just get this, okay. Sorry.
Maybe setting up some remote desktop software like TeamViewer or one of them to, you know, make sure that you're able to provide tech support for those that need it if you've got a friend or family member. Let us know what your experience is in terms of providing technical support for your friends and family over the holiday season. All right, Hubert, Callum, Jackie, thank you so much. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
Now, on one of the other shows, you can hear my dulcet tones. At the lunch break, we do a feature called Bugbears. This is where we get you, the blind and partially sighted community, to tell us what gets on your nerves. Is it the little things or the big things? They're just really annoying. Ugh. Well, one of the big topics you'll be surprised to hear is technology.
My name's Lee Mercer, and my bugbear as a vision impaired person is constant updates to technology. When you've just worked out and have become comfortable using an app or a service, and someone decides that something needs to change in the format or the layout or just the way that the app might look, and then they change it all, and then you struggle for ages trying to work out where everything's moved to because you can't see the pretty updates they've made. And they seem to do it so often that you can never settle down and really learn how to use a lot of things. It'd be really nice if they could just keep things, you know, so straightforward enough so that you're not constantly having to relearn how to use things every couple of weeks.
Hi, my name's Robert King. I'm a digital photographic artist, and my bugbear when you're traveling out and about with your cane and your phone is people accusing you of being a fraud because you're using a phone. There just doesn't seem to be any understanding of the spectrum of blindness. So, and at the end of the day, whose business is it anyway?
My name is Roldy Guylands, and my bugbear is accessibility of general equipment that we need. I get very fed up with touch screens everywhere and not being able to use things like card readers and displays on washing machines and so on. The things that I think ought to be better. It all seems to be about kind of looking just the part and no thought of usability.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Murray. My bugbear today is all about inaccessible apps and websites when you are a screen reader user, regardless of what device you use. There's nothing worse when you come across an app or a website which has a lot of content on it, therefore making it extremely challenging to navigate your way around the website or app comfortably and easily. In addition, I hate it when websites or apps ask to verify that you're not a robot, because quite often the captures are inaccessible. There's nothing worse when websites have inaccessible drop-down menus, calendars, and other accessibility issues. Another thing is when websites have lots of images, but there's no alternative text description available to tell visually impaired people what that image may be.
My name's Holly Tuke, and I'm part of the RNIB's social media team. And my bugbear is when people don't add alt text to images, memes, or GIFs they're sharing on social media. My screen reader will often say image or animated GIF or just the file name of the GIF, and that gives me no context whatsoever. So I'm either missing out on the joke or can't be part of the conversation. So I hope that people will just take a minute. And it's really easy to add alt text to photos you're sharing on social media. If you'd like instructions for each platform on how to do that, you can visit our handy social media guide and checklist. Just go to rnib.in/accessible social media, and the A, the S and the M are capitalised for accessibility purposes.
And we'll be hearing more of those technology bugbears and having a chat amongst ourselves and sharing some of our own, maybe even some solutions as well, a little bit later.
Might be forgiven for thinking that working in music, developing a career in music, would be an obvious path for somebody who is blind or partially sighted. But actually, there are challenges, and here to help us understand more about those challenges and some of the solutions, we have RNIB's music team in the shape of Daisy Higman and Jay Pocknell. Welcome in to RNIB Connect Radio. Fantastic to have you both here.
Thank you.
Jay, I'm going to come to you first. Just tell us, what are some of the challenges you think that blind and partially sighted people may face when developing a career in music or a related field?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to get too bogged down in just the challenges, because I think you can overcome the vast majority. There are blind and partially sighted musicians throughout the industry in different roles. But I think, you know, something to be realistic about is the fact that you need to become your own self-advocate, really. Because I think the music industry is quite competitive. And I think there are still challenges with kind of perception of sight loss and understanding of what sight loss means and appropriate support. So I guess, yeah, you do feel a little bit of responsibility to kind of find those answers for yourself. So I think accessing peer support from other blind and partially sighted musicians or audio engineers is really important, and finding support where it is.
Daisy, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Jay there. I think also reaching out to, you know, there are organisations, including RNIB, including the RNIB's music team, who can help support you with a musical career. There's also fantastic organisations like Help Musicians, Drake Music, the Musicians Union, who offer a huge amount of support for musicians, whether you're starting out or whether you've been established for a long time. In terms of the barriers, I think one of the other ones that we come across often is the, you know, sometimes one of the barriers can be around accessing formats, which is something that RNIB can help. So if you're trying to access music in a particular stave notation in a particular format, whether that's in Braille or large print, that's something that RNIB's transcription team can help with. Then there's lots of technological tools that can help with that as well. And we have resources around those.
Daisy, does Braille music really still have a value in the 21st century? Obviously, you can't read Braille while you're playing the piano.
Oh, definitely. It definitely does. I think what Braille music gives you is the ability to pick up a score and to interpret that score on your own terms. If you're learning by ear, which a lot of visually impaired people do, you tend to pick up the stylistic choices of the performer that you're learning from, whether that's a teacher or whether you're learning from a recording. You learn their interpretation. Whereas if you have a score, you can interpret it the way that you want to much more easily. And you can also make sure that you're actually getting what's accurately there in the score and not picking up on other people's mistakes or, you know, creative choices that maybe aren't what the composer had originally intended. So it gives you independence. It also, you know, being able to read music allows you to understand music on a different level, because you start to understand how you know, things that we might know instinctively as a musician from working by ear. And I say this as someone who teaches, I teach music primarily by ear in my choir. You know, when you've had access to scores and access to reading music, you begin to understand how those building blocks actually fit together, and that gives you a lot more choices and a lot more to play with. You know, it's a tool. It shouldn't be something that we see as like, oh, I've got to learn music. That's a barrier. I think there's something really exciting about being able to read music, especially Braille music, because it has this long tradition. It was invented by Louis Braille. It's, you know, a really incredible tool. We have at the RNIB, we have a little competition each year called the Gardeners Trust Braille Music Literacy Awards, which are five different levels. So we invite, applicants from any age to kind of apply, and we have an information pack on our website which has sample tests. It has a Braille music dictionary, which is absolutely fantastic. And what you can do with those tests is somebody from the RNIB, one of our team, will arrange a test with you, and we give you detailed feedback on your progress with Braille music to help you kind of advance your studies, which is great if you're studying for other exams like a graded music exam or GCSEs or A levels, but also just to see how you're getting on and to test yourself and for the love of the challenge, which may not appeal to everybody, but it's definitely something that I find exciting. And yeah, the other thing to say about Braille music is, yes, there is an element of memorization that's involved with Braille music. You have to memorize what's there, but that's a really useful skill for a musician because, being able to know that music inside out, it really helps build up this deep understanding of the music that I think when you're just sight reading a piece, for those who do sight read, you don't know the music as thoroughly. So there are advantages to memorizing pieces like that.
Access to the written word, whether that's large print or braille or some other format, that's quite important too.
Yes, yeah, and even in my choir, that where a lot of things are taught by ear, I make sure, I need to have access to the music in the right format, and for me, that's modified stave notation. A lot of my singers, if we're doing a longer song, I make sure they have lyric sheets, and I need to make sure those are in the right format. So, making sure that large print is easily available, making sure that my choir can easily find what they need in a format that suits them. Because there's so many people who do music, who aren't musicians in the sort of professional sense of being a musician, but who practice music, who are musicians in another sense, which is that they practice music, whether that's in a community choir or their local band or as a, in their own home, just for the fun of it, they're still musicians, and that there's a huge amount of joy and pleasure that comes from music for, I think, for everybody. There have been studies that have shown that music does really wonderful things to the brain in terms of releasing chemicals that improve our mental health and well-being. So things like oxytocin, dopamine, endorphins, endocannabinoids. There's a real fantastic benefit to be gained from music, and we want more people to be able to access that. So it's really important. A lot of the customers that we get who access our transcription service are people who sing in local choirs, in their community choir, who join a part of a local band, and they want to be able to read their music for their evening class, easily. They want to have access to it, and that's a really, really important thing that the RNIB offers.
One of the big areas of our work at RNIB is to try and improve the availability of those accessible formats for music. And one of the big things we've been working on recently is working with the DAISY Consortium to try and work with mainstream music publishers to increase their awareness around what those accessible formats are and support them to improve their production processes so that when they're creating musical scores for print or for PDF, that there's an intermediary format that is useful for conversion to Braille music or large print modified stave notation, so that everyone is aware of the requirements for someone who is print disabled, partially sighted or blind, or dyslexic. So yeah, I think in the coming years we'll see a lot more availability by default of accessible music scores, which I'm really looking forward to.
We already have a publisher in the UK that is starting to make these scores available, which is really fantastic. So if you go to Choir Community, I think they're choircommunity.com or they might be .org, you can on their website register. It doesn't take very much. There's just a little form to fill out to receive scores in an accessible format. So if you want to have something and try creating your own modified stave notation or try making your own music braille, you can purchase a score from them in a format that is easier to transcribe or to transform into a different format, which is really fantastic.
Daisy Higman and Jay Pocknell from RNIB's Music Service. Thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Dave.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.
at rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Time now for some more of those technology bugbears. What really gets on your nerves with technology?
Hi, my name is Gats Fuertes Osorio, and one thing that annoys me a lot is when people are checking their phones all the time, especially on streets, because as visually impaired, we don't have the chance and also the proper time to react if someone else is in front of us and they are walking, checking their phones, and they don't realize we are about to crash with them. So this is something that annoys me because they have the sight to see us on time, but in our case it's not the same. So I really, really like that people will know about these things and they are conscious that we can avoid this situation.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Murray. My bugbear today is about when websites and application forms online ask you to verify your ID for one reason or another, specifically for official reasons or when you're renewing a passport or other things like that. How can you do this if you can't see, if you're being asked to take a picture of your passport or even a picture of your face? The same can be said for any apps which are linked with this ability of taking pictures of your passport or of yourself.
Hi, this is Dom, and here's one of my bugbears. I really despise video games when they don't have accessibility features. Despite being blind, I do love playing video games, but not a lot of them do have accessibility features or settings. When they do have them, I sometimes even get a tear in my eye because of how rare it is.
Hi, I'm Gary Moritz on Sunset Melodies. My bugbear is of those people who have their heads buried in their phones walking towards me. I'm with the white cane, and instead of them looking out for me, I'm having to look out for them. And so what I tend to do often now is stop in my tracks to see how long it will take before they realize that they're about to walk into me. And they realize, oh, you know, didn't realize you were standing there. And that's because they've got their heads so buried in their phones instead of focusing on where they're walking.
Hello, this is Anne Reddick here from Site Support Rider. And I've got one big bugbear at the moment, which is driving me mad. And that's the increasing use of flat screens for card readers. Recently, my husband and I were in one of our local supermarkets and decided to go for a lunch. And to my horror, we found that the only way of ordering that was on a flat screen. You couldn't speak to a person. The only person you actually spoke to was when the food came out. But everything else had to be done on a flat screen. And that's absolutely impossible for somebody who can't see. So if I was there on my own, I would either have nothing to eat or go to the counter and say, you know, I can't access, and they all will do it for you. You don't always want to have everything done for you. You want to be independent. But if I want to go to the counter and just order something, that's simple, but not on a flat screen. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hubert Pavarkovich, for sharing some of those listener bugbears from the lunch break. So I've been making some notes here. Updates, I mean, they are constant, aren't they? And of course, if you get an update that breaks things, that is massively frustrating. Yeah. I mean, we've been here many, many times. I've taken to turning off updates, but then you do risk, obviously, not having, you know, the latest features and things like that. Sometimes it's worth finding out how other people are getting on.
Yeah, I mean, I was just listening to that then. Sorry to go there again, but I was just listening to that thinking, Sonos?
Yeah.
That was a perfect example.
There's been issues with Sonos.
I think the problem is, though, is that you get so... If you have lots of apps on your phone, and let's face it, most of us do, you know, people recommend an app and you download it and you install it. And you're, well, yeah, it's not bad. And then you might just keep it on your phone. So then, of course, there's an update comes along and you end up with this long list of updates. If you update them individually, You could be there, you know, maybe every few days updating about 20 apps, and that isn't an exaggeration. But then, you know, if you just go update all, then you don't really know what you're updating to. So it is a bit of a dilemma, to be honest.
Speaking of updates, what annoys me, and I want to know what's new in an update. I want to know what's changing, what's new, what have you fixed, what have you, you know. You get an update description that just goes, bug fixes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Nothing
yeah,
else.
That's it.
It's just, what have you done? What have you fixed? Or it's like, we update this up on a regular basis. Please keep updates turned on to make sure you get the latest advancements and features. Well, what is it? What you've changed in the update?
On the subject of being thought a fraud, because you're using a phone, but also you have a cane or a guide dog, has anybody experienced it? I've never experienced this. I hear about this from time to time, people saying that, you know, they're accused of, you know, pretending to be blind. I mean, why would somebody do that anyway, right? But I've never encountered that.
What I've had before, I tend to use my phone with screen curtain turned on. Now, screen curtain is a feature which doesn't turn off your screen, but it turns it black so that people can't see what you're doing on your screens. If someone looks over your shoulder, you know, no one will see what you are doing. It may or may not help with battery life. There's contrasting views on that one. But the main point is what I have had before, mainly on public transport, is someone going, "Your phone's off, mate. It's not working."
Yeah. Do you need help with that? Yeah, I get that quite a lot. Yeah.
No, I haven't. I have to say I haven't had that. I'm a little bit dubious of screen curtain, just from the point of view that if you turn it on and you keep it on, and then something happens with your phone and you can't reboot it, or it's not playing ball, voiceover's disappeared, and I have had experience of voiceover disappearing, then you really are in the soup. Because
that's a good point.
Yeah, that's I'm a little bit dubious of it from that perspective, but I haven't had anybody saying to me, why are you using a phone if you've got a white cane? I don't think they would dare say that to me.
Yeah, imagine. I like screen curtain for privacy reasons, you know, because you just don't know who's looking at your screen.
I understand that.
And I sometimes use it if I have a laptop on the train, for example, you know, in the MVDA screen reader, for example, they have a feature. And I often turn the brightness down as well, just to save battery life, because I don't use the screen at all. So, you know, why send all that power to the screen when I, you know, could extend my battery life?
Yeah, I've never had someone directly accuse me, like directly say, "Oh, you must be faking it" or whatever. I've had a few people who have seemed a bit suspicious, you know, like when they see me using a phone, they say, "Oh, you know, how do you use that?" Sometimes you can tell by the tone that they're kind of wondering. And then when I start explaining to them how it's a screen reader and it talks and it tells me what I'm doing, and then you usually get the, "Oh, it must be a special phone then." No, if you've got a smartphone, you've got it as well.
Yes. Yeah. No, that is true, that sighted people are constantly surprised at all those accessibility features, not just screen reading and screen magnification, but a lot of other things are built in. I have a friend who was recently in a mountain biking accident and he had partial paralysis, couldn't use his hands, so he couldn't actually answer a call. And his girlfriend didn't realise that you can set the phone up to answer automatically, which was a game changer for them. So it's incredible how little awareness there is of some of those accessibility features. A few people mentioned touchscreen chip and pin machines, and of course this is a constant problem that I'm sure we're all familiar with. Solutions, anybody? Any workarounds you found? This is for making a payment, you know, when you get to the checkout or you're at the end of a meal and you go to pay the bill and you're confronted with one of these inaccessible machines. It's all screen. There's no accessibility mode. You feel on the spot. What happens, Hubert?
For me, what I do, but again, this is very case specific. I love using my Apple Watch and the Apple Pay on it to simply just move my wrist towards the card machine, tap, beep. There we go. I love doing it on the underground as well sometimes. It's just so seamless and it just works. Plus, going back to the previous conversation, people just kind of look in awe that I can pay with my wrist just like that, like so futuristic.
Do you know, I think Mrs. Williams might even still have a checkbook, and she has one of those writing frames where she can actually write print on a check I'm rubbish at that kind of caper, but she handwrites like all the Christmas cards as a blind person.
Yeah.
I'm always very impressed by that.
That is impressive.
What about carrying money? A lot of people don't like carrying money, and you know, there is this big debate about having a cashless society. I know more and more people are having to sort of, you know, use card machines or card readers, and Hubert's example is a really good one and a way around it. But you know, what about good old fashioned cash? You know, go for a meal, make sure you've got some money in your pocket, and you know, if they say, well, here's a card reader for you to pay, and you obviously can't because you can't see the screen, I think you do have the right to say, well, look, I'm not refusing to pay. I just can't do it your way because I'm not compromising my privacy. So how about handing money over? And if they say, oh, we don't take cash, say, well, I'll tell you what then, you know, come up with a different way then of making, letting me pay for it, because I just don't think people should be compromised and forced into, you know, making payments on a machine that is totally inaccessible and actually handing over your passwords and stuff to people. No, if they won't accept cash, too bad.
Yeah. The business has got, in theory at least, a responsibility to provide an accessible way to pay. So, yeah, stand your ground. Proving that you're human, whether that be a capture or getting your face in the frame and that kind of thing. Have any of you struggled to prove your humanity?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, 90% of the websites that I come across that use this are using the a thing called ReCAPTCHA, which is actually provided by Google. Because I see a lot of misunderstanding about this. This website has made an inaccessible capture, when actually, a lot of the time, they're embedding this third-party script almost to do the capture checks. And the most popular one, from my experience anyway, is Google's ReCAPTCHA, and that does give you an audio alternative. But yeah, I've come across a few that don't, or that just, yeah, tap the images below or something. I've had a few where
QR codes can be another difficulty when you're waving your phone at your computer screen. I was having difficulty the other day with Microsoft Authenticator app. I was trying to set it up on my own phone for my business laptop, and it was just, I just could not get it. It didn't matter how many times I tried. I got Martin to come in, he had a go, we couldn't do it. So we actually changed, I went for another authentication app, and it's called Authy.
Oh yeah, I've
and I got it first go. Yeah, I got it first go. So it is really frustrating when you get those QR codes that you've got to try and wave your phone at the screen. And normally it does work, but the Microsoft one I did find very difficult.
My favourite one is still, tap all the images with traffic lights.
Yeah, I was led to believe that those things were going to go away. I know some of them have an audio alternative, but then, of course, if you've got a hearing impairment, that's going to be difficult. Yeah. And some of that audio is really difficult understand, especially if you're out and about and you're trying to log into something when you're travelling. I was under the impression that we were going to get some alternatives, like how many legs does a horse have, or what colour is milk? And, you know, you'd have to write in your answer and that would prove. Yeah, but not everywhere uses that, obviously.
One option that I sometimes use to get around them, if they're really inaccessible, if it's one of those ones, because sometimes you get the ones where it's like filling the numbers below from the image. What you can do sometimes, doesn't always work, because it depends if they have a time limit on them, because some of them maybe refresh, or it changes after like 30 seconds. But sometimes you can grab that image, or you can take a screenshot, run it through something like Be My Eyes or Aira's Access AI. I would probably do Access AI, actually, because then you can get it verified. You might be able to get the numbers or the letters that way and then put them in. That can sometimes work if you've not, as I said, if it's not one of those that changes every now and again.
So let's just go round, each of you. What would be your technology bugbear, Hubert?
It's the previously mentioned updated descriptions. Please add detail. I want to know what you fixed, what you've added, and the fact that you don't always put that is a bit frustrating when you're actually quite anxious about updating apps just in case it breaks everything.
This is a new episode of Tech Talk. We've made it much better, but we're not going to tell you how. Callum?
Mine is things that are half accessible. Like I had to go for a doctor's appointment the other day, So I went in, and as we often get, there's these little screens to check in. And as far as I know, that was not accessible, which if I was on my own, then that's fine. I could, you know, go to the receptionist or something and check in that way. But in this case, my wife checked in and, you know, that was fine. We're used to that. But then it read out my, it was one of those where it comes up with your name on screen rather than them shouting it out. But this one actually read out my name. So it said, Mr. Callum Stoneman, go to Dr. whatever the name was, and in room F3. And I'm just kind of thinking, well, first off, that bit's great, but I couldn't check in to actually let you know I was here. Secondly, where's F3? Like, what? You're so close, but you're just still not quite. It's just not quite there. It's like you're
so
trying,
close,
but
it's so far away.
Yeah.
Did you find F3, Callum?
Only because I had my amazing wife with me, yeah. Oh, but if I was on my own.
The way to get around that one, though, is when you go into the doctor. I mean, we have the same system here. And what I do is I go to reception when I go in. They know me anyway now. So, but if there is a different person and I've not come across before, I say, excuse me, could you let the doctor know that I can't see the screen? Could the doctor come out for me? And that's what they do. And that gets around that problem. But I agree, it's all beep, and then your name flashes up on the screen. You've got no way of knowing. So I think it's more simple to just ask the doctor to come out.
Yeah.
I used to think, you know, in the post office, when they say, cashier number 6, please, that they should have a speaker at the place where you need to go, and then you could at least get a you know,
sense
an audio
direction.
Yeah, exactly. If it all comes out the same speaker, then that's tricky. Jackie, what about you? What's your tech bugbear?
It's probably not a big deal, actually, but it's one that I have come across. If you're on a website, for example, and it's particularly, say, something like Amazon or a website that's got lots and lots of different links in your search results, when you go in to check a product and then you press the left alt and left arrow to come back out of it, you are never plopped in the same place that you were in your list of search results. So you often have to go right the way through the results again to find the link that you just entered on, and then go to the next one after it and continue with your search. So that can be a bit of a bugbear when, as I say, you go into a website, you enter on a link, and then when you want to back out of it, you're not where you were before you went in there, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And a lot of software does that, right? You know, even in your email or a Word document, doesn't always go back to where you expect to be. You know, if you shut down your computer, or you were in the middle of something, like literally in the middle of a list, or in the middle of, you know, why wouldn't you go back to the place that you were? Why would you always be sent back to the beginning?
It's top a bit of the like, page or something. Yeah, it's really annoying, actually.
It's a bit like Snakes and Ladders or something, isn't it?
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more annoying I get about it.
Yeah, there we are. So let us know your technology bugbears. And of course, if you found any workarounds or solutions, we'd love to hear those. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Now, let's talk about a community library, specifically North Harrow Community Library. It's an independent, volunteer-led library in northwest of London, and they run some really wonderful groups and events. And joining us today to tell us a little bit more about one group specifically is Kamal Shah. It is really nice speaking with you today.
Hello.
Now, tell me a little bit about the library itself. Obviously, independent, volunteer-led, so it's a little bit different than your usual kind of libraries you see around.
It's an unusual story. It happened in 2015. The Harrow Council decided to close 4 libraries in Harrow. So they went down from 10 to down to 6 libraries. And we sort of put up a fight to either save it, which didn't work. And then we ended up taking it over after a 3-year battle. So in 2018, we opened the library as a volunteer run, and it's financed by the community. No grants are given towards it by the council. And we run it with 60 volunteers who help to open it, clean it, anything going is volunteer based.
That's amazing. And you have quite a few. I was checking out some of your Facebook pages, and I know you run some really lovely events. You just had a beautiful party for the kids as well, I think, ahead of Christmas and festivities. But you have a new group that has kind of developed. So how did that group come together? It's a group specifically for people who are blind or partially sighted.
It happened because I bumped into Laura Marshall from RNIB at a conference. And I sort of jumped on the idea that we should do this. And together with Laura and RNIB, we sort of came up with the idea of running this group, helping with tech for people. So the group basically is, at the moment, every month, once a month, the second Friday of the month at 1:30, it's a drop-in. Anybody can come. And it's like a peer-to-peer support. But we've got a few people who are very good at their phones and tablets, so they can pass on their knowledge and help each other, basically. So if you're visually impaired and need some help, this is the place to come if you're in the area of Harrow or near any of the boroughs nearby. We will help you. If we can't help you, we'll find a solution for you. So it's we've got a couple of ladies who are really good at their phones and things and how to use it. So they pass on that knowledge to the other people who are not as proficient with their phones.
So you mentioned the group's been running for around a year now. Have you seen quite a few of the same people return? What numbers are you looking at currently?
It is very slow. The pickup is slow. We're having around 5 to 10 at the most, but I think the word needs to get out there that we are here. It's a bit difficult to get get people to know about it, but we're trying our best. With RNIB's help, we are trying to pass the information out there that there is a group here who can help. And we're also working with the Middlesex Association for the Blind. They usually have one person come along at every meeting as well.
And what have you heard so far from people that do come to this group regularly? Because as I said, it's peer support, and I feel like these sorts of groups have so much meaning for people to kind of be able to catch up and just have this opportunity to go and meet with someone who kind of understands what you're going through when you are living with sight loss.
I think it's well received. The people who do come to it do appreciate it, meeting some, making friends, meeting other people who are in the same position, and gaining some tips on how to cope with tech, generally life. Because obviously, somebody who's visually blind has a much tougher life than somebody who has normal sight. So I think it's working. Slow to pick up, but it's perseverance is the word we are going to use for this group, and we will carry on doing. I mean, we had a similar sort of issue. We've got a knitting group on a Monday, and when we started, it was very slow to pick up. But now we have like about 25 to 30 women, no men, joining it. So the idea is we're going to keep going and build it up slowly.
And that makes sense. And obviously with these things, it takes time, especially with word of mouth. So if someone's listening, they're kind of in the area, North Harrow Community Library is not too far from them. How would they find out more? What's the easiest way to get in touch?
It's every second Friday of the month, 1:30. You don't need to ring up and book anything, just drop in. We're open to anybody dropping in on that day. I'm particularly keen to have younger people who live in Harrow, who are visually impaired and are looking for training to return back to employment, some sort of employment. And what I am working on is working with Harrow Council to provide that training for people. So that is my next pet project for this group as well, to not only have peer-to-peer support, but also help younger people to get back into employment.
What would that involve? Would you be looking at maybe CVs or like any other specific skills you would like to?
Actually, first, initially, I am told by some of the people who are in that group is you need particular software training, screen readers and things like that. And then the next part of it, the project also would be they would help them do their CVs, interview training, even possibly referrals to employers. Because we already have, for visually sighted, a project going on in the library in conjunction with Harrow Council, helping people find jobs, getting them ready for interviews in terms of CV, and actually doing interviews from proper employers in the library as a dummy thing, but to give them confidence interviews. So I want to do a similar sort of thing for somebody who's visually impaired.
I love that you're talking about making sure you're kind of catering it to what the individual person's going to need when it comes to upskilling and making sure they feel a bit more confident when it comes to applying for jobs.
Exactly.
But it's been lovely hearing about the group, and we're wishing you all the best, more members, of course, and we'll make sure to spread the word. But in the meantime, Kamal, thank you so much for speaking on the RNIB Connect Radio.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
All right, we've received an email in from Bill, who writes, "Hi folks, in the next couple of weeks, I will be given a Samsung Galaxy A33 mobile phone as my son is upgrading. I'm totally blind. Is a phone like this easy to set up? And what words do I need in order to use the talkback?" So, any thoughts for Bill?
Yes. First and foremost, if you're going to be using TalkBack, you need to, in order to turn it on, press and hold both volume buttons once the phone loads. Press both volume buttons for a second or two, and TalkBack hopefully will start. And then you can begin your setup from there. Other goodies: don't turn on the Gemini assistant. If the phone supports Gemini, and I'm not sure that particular model does, but if it does, don't accept that by default. Because I found when I set up my Pixel 9 recently that I just let it go with the default of Gemini, and I then found it quite difficult to ask Google questions because the assistant is slightly different. So I would stick with the regular Google assistant until you get yourself familiarized. And then if your phone supports Gemini, then you can switch to Gemini. I just found it a little bit tricky to begin with, that Gemini was sort of playing tricks a bit and was more kind of informational rather than actually doing something constructive like opening an app.
Jackie, I appreciate that point about the voice assistant. Just back on the screen reader, though, and to Bill's question about TalkBack. So you press the volume up and volume down buttons together, hold that,
yes,
and TalkBack should start. If it
yes.
doesn't, or you need help with getting started with TalkBack, what would your advice be there?
Panic.
Nice.
Oh, right. Well, I think if you've got sighted assistance, you could go into settings and accessibility and start TalkBack from there.
Yeah. Or there used to be a way that you could place two fingers, not totally wide apart, but just slightly, very slightly wide apart in the middle of the screen when the phone loads, and keep the fingers pressed on the screen. And that sometimes will start TalkBack on an older model phone. So that's also worth trying, seriously.
Okay. And then in terms of actually getting started using TalkBack, if you've never used TalkBack on an Android phone before, Callum, I think you were going to come in on this one.
Yeah, so when TalkBack first starts up, it gives you a little tutorial. So I think it takes you through about six or seven different lessons, if I remember rightly, just to teach you about the different gestures and typing and selecting text and editing text, you know, copy, paste, all that kind of thing. It teaches you all those gestures and certain things on how to navigate the phone as well. And I think there's some advanced things you can do. I can't remember off the top of my head how deep the tutorial goes, but it should give you enough to get set up and, you know, do the things that you need to do.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. And that's what makes the tutorial now in iOS so good, is that that is a really good tutorial to use as well. But Android has had that for some time, and it is really useful to practice. And then when you've had enough, you can dismiss the tutorial as well.
Yeah, and you can go into that at any point that you want as well. It's not just, it will do it at the startup when you first start TalkBack, but then if you ever want to go over anything again, you can always go into TalkBack settings and there's tutorial there as well, so you can redo it as many times as you want to.
There's also the accessible Android website that has lots of information, yes, about getting started with TalkBack as well, so you might want to check that one out as well, Bill. Go and have a little mosey around the accessibleandroid.com.
There's a good podcast as well.
Blind Android Users is the podcast. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, it's a good one.
All righty. Well, good luck with that new phone, Bill. Thanks for getting in touch, and let us know how it goes. And if you have a question or would like to get in contact like Bill, you can send an email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's it from Tech Talk this time. Thank you so much for your company. We really do appreciate it. And if you have any thoughts about anything you've heard on Tech Talk or anything you would like to hear on Tech Talk, we would love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich and Jackie Brown, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.